It's been a long time. Been a long time. Been a long, lonely, 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 lonely time.
Some things are better when they rock. Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos. Play 24/7 with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pool, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Been a long time since you rock and rolled? Visit us in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida, or online at SeminoleHardRock.com.
Underground Garage's Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's time for your Coolest Conversations podcast in Little Steven's Underground Garage, presented by Hard Rock. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My guest today is Micah Morris of the Denver-based band Fast Eddie. Their new album is Take a Look. It's out now on Spaghetti Town Records, and that title track is also a recent coolest song in the world. We'll hear a bit of that now, and then I'll have Micah on the line with me for your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. We're back with the Mighty Manfred, and on the line with me now and geared up for today's Coolest Conversations is Micah Morris, lead vocalist and one of two guitarists in Fast Eddie from Denver, Colorado. Title track to their album Take a Look is this week's coolest song in the world. How are you, Micah?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm hanging in there pretty well, I think. I just wanted to find out how you and the guys were doing, if you were able to keep healthy the last couple of years there in the Mile High City.
Yeah, we were. COVID was a mixed blessing for us, for sure. We had two tours we had to cancel when it started, and honestly, it was a blessing in disguise because it gave us the time and attention to focus on finishing up this album as a full length and recording these songs, the last four songs that we hadn't released as singles. But we all caught COVID. Once or twice for sure as a band, and been through a hell of a ride for sure, but I'd say we survived, and we're better than ever. So
what doesn't kill me makes me stronger.
Exactly.
So I introduced you as a lead singer, one of the band's two guitarists. When did you start to play guitar?
I started when I was 13. I started on the bass, but I went over to my buddy's house and he had all these pedals, and he had like a LTD, like Explorer style guitar with like a diamond plate on it and a screecher pedal. And I was like, that's radical. So I have to switch up my gear.
Well, why did you start on the bass?
I don't know. I thought it was a cool instrument. I saved up money mowing lawns to buy my first little bass thing. You know, it was like one of those Guitar Center kits. It had like a Squire bass, a little amp. Uh-huh. And I loved it. I played it every day for hours and hours. But then I saw there's just so much more versatility with the guitar for me. Not that that's the reality with the instrument of the bass, but something kind of just entranced me about it. And I just became obsessed when I was like 13. I haven't stopped ever since. So
you see the bass and you save up money mowing lawns to buy a bass. Did you How did you get a hold of your first guitar?
It was a Christmas gift. It was a little Epiphone SG kind of intro model thing. And I remember I played it every day. I slept with it. I was obsessed with electric guitar. Yeah.
So your family then was pretty supportive?
Yeah, I come from a very musical family. My mom used to do production work with Carole King in the 70s, and my dad was a musician. He used to play in a band with Christopher Cross in Austin in the 70s too. And so they were all super supportive with music, and my brothers were in a band, and it's definitely like in the genes. So on my mom's side, my second cousin was Mike Nesmith of the Monkees. And so there's just like nonstop family music from when I was a kid. And I don't know, it was just very much encouraged.
So you mentioned having brothers. Are they older siblings?
Yeah, they're older.
So you got the benefit of everybody's record collection as you were growing up?
I did, sort of. They were really into punk rock, and that's where I kind of got into it. They were in a band, and they wouldn't let me play bass in their band, so I was upset about that. But
what's the age difference?
They were five. The closest one to me is 5 years older than me, so I was a little bit too young, I think. But yeah, it pissed me off. It made me want to start my own band. And the irony is that they got back involved in like the church and stuff, and they left rock and roll behind, and they were the ones that got me into it, really. So I never left, and now they're off kind of living more churchy lives still to this day, I believe. So
so they wouldn't let you in the band, so you went off to form your first band. So how old were you then?
Well, my first technical band was like a Metallica cover band when I was 12. It was just goofy, and then they kicked me out, and then I was like, well, screw that. So I started a punk band when I was 14 called The Classifieds, and that turned into a band called The Introverts. And I have a couple people that I'm still friends with to this day that I still play music with that were in that band. So
at that point, were you playing guitar?
At that point, yeah, I had switched to guitar. It was, you know, power chords and pentatonic scales. And then that's still what I play to this day. So
Were you singing lead in that band? Classified?
I was playing lead guitar. I had my best friend at the time sing, and I didn't think I could be a singer. I thought I was just going to be a guitar player. But once that band split up, I was like, well, I better learn how to sing. Otherwise, I'm just not going to do anything. So.
Well, let's think of some here about Fast Eddie. Did the band start, around maybe 2014, around then? Or how long have you guys been together?
Yeah, it was started in 2014.
And what brought you guys, why'd you guys form? Did you already know the other guys?
Yeah. Well, Lissandro and I had been writing music together. We were in different bands in Denver. I was in a band called Six Shooter, and he was in a band called Warhawk. And we actually put like a little split 10-inch together with both of our bands. And so me and him had already been writing music probably for the last 12 years, anyhow, since we first sort of became friends. And so we had some of those songs together. And then our buddy Devin, Devin actually was like a classical jazz trained bass player and was in another band called Itch.io, which is a huge performance art band in Denver. That's like a 50 piece band or something. They have, they play like Tesla coils, and they all wear black masks and stuff. And it was a bizarre thing, but they do really well. They're on like alternative tentacles. But so he was in that project. He had never been in a band where he could show his face. So he was excited to work with me and Lissandro on a side project. And we had known Arj just through the rock and roll scene in Denver. He was in a bunch of kind of doomy, heavier rock and roll bands as a guitar player, actually. But I didn't even know he was a drummer until one night we all met at a bar and we were like, let's go back to my house and jam. And that same night we wrote the song Sick of the City, and that's on our first self-titled full length. And we still perform that song.
Oh, cool. So. Well, let's make this clear. So Devin's a bass player, Arj is the drummer, and Lissandro is the other guitar player, or lead guitar player?
He plays leads. We both play leads, so he's just a guitar player, I would say.
And so with Fast Eddie, have you done a lot of touring? Had you done a lot of touring before Fast Eddie formed?
Yeah. Well, I toured with my band Six Shooter, and Lissandro had toured with another band. But Lissandro and I were actually in a different band called Dirty Few from Denver, and we toured a whole bunch with that band. So I kind of had some cues to pull from that band to my next tours that I would book myself. And
So you've spent a good amount of time on the road in a van with other guys in a band.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. So you're with your guys and you're going down the road and you're kind of napping, right? You got your eyes closed, and the windows are rolled up and somebody farts. Do you know immediately whose fart that is and who should take responsibility for it?
Yeah, I think at this point, for sure. I think we kind of identified each other's brands.
So why the hell is that guy not owning up to it? Just roll down the damn window, you know?
Oh, there's no shame amongst anybody that went up to their part in a group, for sure.
Well, hey, I was looking through your Facebook page and I saw that Devin, the bass player, he popped the question to his lady, right? Is that right? Did I read that correctly?
They're engaged. That was the night of our show at TVI in New York City. So it's pretty special.
Yeah, well, please give him our best.
I will, absolutely.
So the new album, Take a Look, is available from Spaghetti Town Records. I heard some story about you guys being on the way to record songs for it in Atlanta, and you had a serious van mishap. Was that on the way to record tracks for this album?
And what happened? It was our first journey down to Atlanta with recording with Tuck and Dan Dixon. So we had inherited this van from our other band, Dirty Few. We call it the Green Booger, and it's just a piece of shit. There's like only one door that works on it. And Lissandro took it to these guys to replace the tires or something. And he was like, oh yeah, I got it all set up. It's totally fine. And we were like, okay, cool. So we were driving through like Southern Illinois on the way down to Atlanta. And we just, the van starts like shaking violently. And we're like, I think that there's something going on. And no, it's just the road, man. I'm pretty sure it's just the road. And then I was like, I don't know. And all of a sudden we hear like a thud, and driving next to us in the median is the tire. So the tire fell off, and it was like a Looney Tunes moment, you know, like when they're like racing a car and the tire's gone and you look over and you're like, that doesn't look right. And we're going like 70 miles an hour in the left lane at the time. And Devin just kind of, you know, eases on the brakes, pulls over, very well done. He had only had his license for like a few weeks prior to this too, so it was pretty impressive.
Wow. Let me ask, so this was the tire came off?
Front
left tire.
Yeah, wow. While we were going 5 miles an hour. And luckily, I think the weight of the amps in the back weighed the van down enough to where it didn't flip or anything, but that it could have easily been a fatal crash. And I've heard more often than not that if you get loose lug nuts and your tire falls off on the front wheel in a big van like that, you'll flip. So we got really lucky there. But it definitely cut into studio time for our first recording. Also, Tuck didn't know us that well at all. He knew me through another friend of mine. And I was like, well, it looks like we're going to be a day behind pretty much getting there. And then it cut into pre-production and it, and we didn't really have any plans for where to stay, but Tuck was generous enough to just set up a guest room for us with bedding on the floor and a little bed. And it was just a real Southern hospitality.
And here we should point out, you're talking about Tuck Smith, and yeah. He produced the album, and we're fans of his here in the Underground Garage. You know, we know him as the lead singer in the Biters and also the front man for Tuck Smith and the Restless Hearts. So you guys, did I hear you right? Just a moment ago, you said you didn't really know him that well ahead of time. But what was it like to work with him?
I compare him to the Gordon Ramsay of music, in that like it's like Kitchen Nightmares or something. He'll come in and he'll just he'll degrade you and shame you and ridicule you in the most loving way possible.
So does he ever say bless his heart?
Yeah, he's like, oh, bless your heart. No, he'll just say my complaints are like a little bitch, shape up. He's like, oh, what, you're just wasting my time in here. I see, he's come all the way down here, he can't even play guitar, sounds like shit. So I don't know if I can curse on this interview.
No,
or not,
you already have.
Yeah.
No, that's okay. This is grown up. It ain't Howard Stern, but it's grown up. So 10 tracks on the album. Now, some of these songs came out earlier as singles.
Yeah, a lot of them. Actually, six songs on the album, which I really didn't want it to go that way, but sorry, let me just think here. Well, okay, so COVID delayed everything for us.
Right.
And we didn't really want to lose the momentum that we had. So it was kind of like this thing of like, well, the record's not getting pressed fast enough. There isn't enough stuff to work with here. So we have to release a single. It was almost like kind of like being held hostage at a certain point. We're like, well, shit, I got to give up something else now. I didn't want... Like, for instance, Game of Love and Dead Eyes, we put them out as a single, and I was trying to save them for the full length, but it was like, man, if we don't put out another release here, we're just going to lose all right. of this momentum we built. And we still sort of did lose momentum, and those were tracks that we were really excited to put out, but I kind of felt like they fell on, you know, they releasing them didn't, you know, it was like, oh, we didn't get the press that we really wanted from doing the singles, but I think we sort of compensated with the full length release now. So,
yeah. Well, what are the four songs that you finished the album up with?
Help Me, Take a Look, Sunflower Bank, and Frankie Died.
And talking about Take a Look, some, that's our coolest song of the world this week. You mentioned working with Tuck. What's something like as a producer that he might have added to the song, like a backing vocal idea or arrangement? Is there anything specific you can put your finger on that he added to the tune?
In this particular case, we're really open to collaboration with them. I didn't, you know, we go in with an open mind because we trust them. And I will also mention that Dan Dixon is a huge part of the production as well.
Okay.
Underspoken, but he sort of, so Take a Look was a song I wrote. I actually had the whole thing demoed out with all the parts on GarageBand myself. And I just kind of took it to him and we dissected everything. And with him, you know, he's got these cool little ideas. We'll tell him kind of like everything that we want to pack in there. And, you know, we build it up from the bones of the bass and the drums, and stuff just happens in the studio. Like, oh, I have an idea on the fly here now, and we'll just kind of facilitate what we want. It down, and I think that we could him because he understands the sound we are trying to achieve, which is kind of the late 70s power pop, rock and roll, classic rock kind of, that's like high production value, but not too overproduced, you know?
Yeah.
So there was a couple things that happened just in the studio organically, like he had ideas for the guitar lead being octaved, you know, so two octaves on the opening lead. And then there's just a couple other things, like we came up with that, like that little synthy keyboard line in the bridge.
Yeah.
We got in the studio, and Dan Dixon has all these really cool, like vintage synthesizers and little Casio keyboards and all this stuff. And that part was actually just written on a little tiny Casio keyboard from the 80s. But
cool. Well, I saw too that you guys had done a video for it. So tell me about the Kung Fu Academy and how they got involved.
Well, I went to that school for a while. The trainer over there is like he's a Shaolin monk from China. And he was like raised in the Shaolin monastery, the Shaolin temple. And he has a school here in Denver, and there's only a few other schools like in the country that actually do that. One of them is in New York City. But they were really cool to me while I was involved in that and in their school. And they do a lot of good stuff for the community around here. I live in sort of a half Asian, half Mexican neighborhood. And I just have noticed that he struggled to keep afloat during COVID and all of that stuff. And I felt like the message tied into this story I had of, you know, underdog kid getting bullied and learning how to defend himself and stand up for himself. And I figured it was a way to help support them and the students over there, and also kind of they could provide me with some badass Kung Fu kids for the movie. So
so were you a badass Kung Fu kid when you were growing up?
No, not remotely. I'm not built for Kung Fu. I could maybe do boxing or something a little bit more efficiently with my build, but I could if I was more disciplined, but I found my hobby, which is music, and it's a lot easier to sit down and play guitar than it is to try and do somersaults.
You know, another track I really enjoy on the album is Game of Love, and I think you said you had issued that earlier as a single, but it's got a really cool atmosphere you create with that one. And the line in there that I really like is everyone needs a little heartbreak to set your mind straight. So did you come up with that line?
I did.
Tell me some about the band and the songwriting process for you guys, because you mentioned with Take a Look that you had actually kind of demoed that in GarageBand ahead of time. Is that the usual way songs come together, or how does that?
We're about half and half. Some of our songs are completely collaborative, and then there's some songs that are just mine that I'm a little like stubborn about holding on to them, and sometimes I don't want to give them to the band because I have put songs that I've written into bands in the past that die, and then those songs just die with the band, you know, if the band falls apart. But I kind of have worked up to this point, especially with this album, where I was like, okay, obviously we've been a band forever, we're not going anywhere, we've been through the worst of our drama with each other, and they're my family and my brothers, so I'm gonna throw these songs on the album now. But so I wrote some of those songs, like Game of Love is one of those ones I wrote myself like completely, and then, you know, they just kind of add their own parts and personality to it.
So another line, in fact it's in the tune Frankie Die, which I think you said that was one of the last four songs that you recorded for the album, right? Is that Frankie Died? Yeah. And so the line in there, and you got some cool bottle metaphors in it, but the one that was going to ask you about is he let the bottle solve his problems. We all know why. Well, I don't know why. Why did he?
I think that is kind of one of those things that is the point of why I wrote it like that. It was like, well, I don't know why. Why did he?
Was Frankie a real person?
About that, like, oh shit, what does he mean? Like, why would I know that? That song was actually about a guy that had actually attacked me when I was like 17. And I don't know if he's dead or not now, but I don't really foster any positive feelings towards him. So that was kind of my retribution song.
It was kind of, if you'd gone more to the Kung Fu school, you could have taken care of that.
I'm sure I could still take care of him now if I wanted to, but he was a very intimidating older fellow when I was a teenager. And now that I'm older, I'm like, that guy sucks. He's just a total dick.
Yeah, so. It doesn't sound like he was a very nice guy. I mean, I definitely picked up on that. Mm-hmm. We were talking about, we mentioned being out on the road and stuff. I know you finished up a tour recently, and I saw that you played in Milwaukee at the Cactus Club. Yeah. I really like the town and the Cactus Club, as I remember, was kind of tucked off in this neighborhood. And you go in, and the first room is this tiny, tiny ass little bar, and then you go through a door, and then in this back room where they have the bands play, there's like this huge vaulted ceiling and this massive stage for this tiny little room, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to point out to you, when I first played the Cactus Club, it wasn't like that. You went to the back room, and that's where bands play, but you just sat up on the floor, and there were just a couple of booths in there, and we played there a couple of times. That was fine, and then we came back like 2 years later, and it was like we walked this portal into another dimension because it was so over the top, you know, like a rock stage crammed back in this room. Have you played the Cactus Club much over the years?
I've played there. This will be my third time playing there, I believe, maybe fourth. But they have subs in the stage and incredible monitors, and just the sound in there is huge. It's really cool. And it's pretty small, but I know that even like Queens of the Stone Age played there, and there's been a bunch of big acts that have played there.
I know, it's really, really a cool place. So on the album, you've got a song titled Milwaukee, and in it you sing about leaving your heart there. What's the connection to the city?
Well, Lissandra and I wrote that song about the first time we went to Milwaukee with our band Dirty Few. And we were playing with a band from there called Midnight Reruns. And they've since split up, but they were just the most hospitable people in the world. And I was going through a breakup at the time. Well, sort of. I was just trying to navigate sort of a tumultuous relationship. But then while I was there, I was with all of these awesome friends and cool Milwaukee people that are just like the most hospitable people I've ever met. And they're crazy too. And they love to party and have fun. And they were just so generous. And that was a really special time, I think, for us, that one trip that we had. And so we wrote the song. And there's a few people that I could have like in, you know, a mental picture of in my head now, even that we wrote the song about. And to them, it's like, you know, it's like Milwaukee's anthem now. Like, they love that.
That's cool. I was going to say, I'm so happy to hear you talk about the hospitality you felt there. When we had played there, over the years, a lot of times we played with this trio called Bleed, like BLEED. And it's the same thing. It was like we went up there and the guys in that band and in their immediate circle of friends, just incredible people. And we would come into town and they would have, they call them barbecues, but I'm from the South, so I would call them cookouts, you know. Yeah. And but they'd be grilling stuff and having us over and just turning it, you know, the shows were just always a great party time, and just what a great community of folks up there. Really cool music scene.
Yeah, they have really cool music out there too. It's It's funny. I feel like I don't know. I feel good about writing a song about it because there's not really any songs about it that I know of at all. So it's kind of like, I don't know. You know, the Standells wrote about Boston. This is like our dirty water, but for Milwaukee.
Right. Well, also on this recent tour, you played a festival in Atlanta. What was that? What was that called?
Down South Showdown?
Yeah, that's it. Did you play with Wildlife?
Yeah, Wildlife and Rambler and a bunch of other really cool underground rock and roll bands. That's the spot. My buddy Chase, I'll call him my cousin, he puts that festival on. I actually do a similar fest in Denver called the Rocker Mountain Ripper with a lot of the same bands.
Well, Wildlife, we're big fans of here in the underground underground garage. Have you done any other shows with them?
Yeah, they played my Rocker Mountain Ripper Fest in September last year, and they're actually playing it again this year, which I'm putting together in early September. But we toured, Lissandra and I toured with Wildlife on the West Coast in 2017. So I've known them for years. They're good friends of ours then.
Very cool guys.
Yeah, they're great.
So you mentioned in September having this festival in Denver. What are your plans for the rest of the year outside of that?
Well, we were talking about doing a West Coast tour in July. We just kind of want to wrap up the country because we did, you know, pretty much the whole East Coast and the South and the Midwest. So want to do kind of just wrap it off for the touring on this album in the US at least. And then maybe by next year, we could do a European tour.
Have you played overseas in Europe before?
No, I haven't, but I'm actually going to be filling in for, have you heard of the Whiffs?
No.
The Whiffs from Kansas City. They're a really good little power pop band. They sound kind of like the Nerves.
Yeah.
They're Kansas City, but they're doing a European tour in April, and they asked me to fill in on guitar for that. So I'll be doing that in April, and hopefully it'll kind of get my sea legs for, hopefully I can use some of my newfound knowledge to help my band out.
I hope so. Playing in Europe is pretty terrific. You know, it's fun to play in the States, but what is different there is that, or at least in my experience, is that there's never a situation where you're at odds with a venue. Like, you know, sometimes you go and play a show in the US and you show up and it's like the bartenders, the sound guy, it's like this us versus them thing. And it's like, man, why are you guys being such jerks? You know, we're just here to play a show and get people to drink beer, you know? And has that ever happened to you?
Being at odds with a venue?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. All the time. And I don't understand. You know, the biggest troubles that I have, honestly, most independent venues are pretty cool. But the biggest problem I have is with production companies like AEG and Live Nation and these promotional companies that take over these independent venues and we work with them. And then they have these, I feel like some of the people that they hire to book the show and to run sound and all of this stuff, it's like they come out of music school or something and they don't have any real experience. And they have like an attitude and then they throw on all these crazy weird little security fees and shit on their total. And I hate it. I can't stand that. So I work, you know, like I said, I put this festival on in September and I'm only working with independent venues for that reason.
Well, so you get overseas and that's something that doesn't happen. I mean, I've never experienced that overseas where it's the band comes and it's like the priority is to make sure that the artist, that the band feels comfortable with everything, understanding that, you know, if they feel welcome and comfortable, that's only going to make everything that much better. You know, there's going to be a better performance. You know, it's going to, that energy is going to.
The U.S. is so cutthroat with the live music industry. I don't understand.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, it's like you show up and then there'll be the load in food. And then there's a sound check food or drinks. Yeah. And then there's dinner. And then backstage, there are other snacks if you want. You know, the whole thing is just, you know, just creating an atmosphere to make the show as good as it can instead of trying to be jerks, you know.
In the United States, it's almost like pay to play or something. There's like this, it's your privilege to be able to play there.
Now, that used to be the case in the UK too. The UK used to be far more similar to the US. I remember playing in a pub and going up to the bartender and saying, you know, what's the deal for bands? And the guy just looked at me like, what do you mean? And I said, well, we're playing here. And he said, yeah, I know you're playing. I said, well, can I get a discount on a beer? And he said, why should you? And I was just like, well, I don't know. You know, I kind of thought we were on the same team here, but since we've been going back, it's just that atmosphere isn't as much that way. And in fact, in the past, it was completely unheard of that, like, people in the audience, you know, other musicians would even put you up. But now that seems to be far more commonplace.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's what I've heard. There's a few venues that I know in the States that do adhere to that principle. We just played TBI, like I said, in New York City, and that was the most hospitable venue I've had in the States, honestly, with like the most accommodations that were thought about. They think about what the bands are doing, and they think about what would make a band more comfortable. And, you know, it's like, gosh, if you take care of a band, you're taking care of the performance, you're making the environment more enjoyable for everybody, and then the show goes better. And it's just like, I don't know, it's good business. Like, what other business model do you get to go and just be a total asshole to everybody involved, and then you get to keep all the money? And, you know, I don't know, it's crazy. It's not a very good business model in the United States, that's for sure, but I feel like some people are catching on.
So the other track I'd like us to hear off of Take a Look is Help Me, and Tale of Unrequited Love here.
Yeah, I wrote that song forever ago. I actually used it in my old band, Six Shooter. It's sort of just like, I don't know, it's that sentiment of being sort of a hopeless romantic musician that is kind of stumbling his way around through life. Dressing in a way that embellishes his vanity, and he's kind of living for himself and living for his friends and trying to impress and be this rock star character. But then really, you know, that's actually a weak character. That's somebody that's kind of down on his hands and knees and needs a little help to stand up. And, you know, it's really the romance that makes the rocker, I think, is what that song is all about.
I love the breakdown you have in there, and then, you know, you build it up from there. Whose idea was it to have that breakdown?
I had that initially in the first song, but it really kind of took on a new life with Tuck and our production with the band, because Lissandro had the idea to throw in that kind of like Jackson 5 disco guitar part, the ding,
yeah,
ding.
Yeah.
And it really kind of brings out this like gospely kind of soul rock and roll faces kind of, I don't know what it really is. It's just uplifting, you know. And I think, once again, if we didn't have the production time in the studio, that never would have happened. We never would have like drawn that out. And also on that song, I never had projected that hard at the very end, vocals. I never projected so much, or, you know, screamed it out on the end. And that, so that break and that build up and all of that, just that was kind of studio magic that happened. And it was like, oh wow, this is where it really needed to be. That needs to be the climax, you know. So
just rock and roll sorcery going on with that one.
Yeah. Thanks.
Well, I'm gonna tell you what's so funny here is that with the Woggles, we 2 weeks ago we recorded, and we got a song, Lean On Me.
Uh-huh.
And it's the same thing, man. I got the breakdown and the Michael Jackson thing, you know, the Jackson 5, the kind of Morse code kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a soulish thing, and it builds up. What we don't have in there, it's like you've got like some foot stomping in that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we don't have the foot stomping. Instead, I've got maracas, but it's the same idea in the organ building up and the same sort of thing. So as you know, I'm a sucker for that. So when I heard that and helped me, I was like, oh man, we got it. I got to play this, man. And I got to tell this guy, it's like the great ideas are hanging there in the ether. We got to pick that fruit. Got to pick that fruit and make use of it.
That's awesome. I'm really glad that you appreciated it in that way. I was worried that song would kind of get swept in the undertow of Take a Look, because I think that one is, I think that one, whether or not you're a rock and roller, I think that song could preach to more a broader demographic than most of the rest of the songs on the album, just because it's approachable.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you've got a great mix of soundscapes, let's say, on there. You know, there's some driving songs, and man, I really like Help Me a Lot, and that's a good way to sort of you know, we can only play two songs here in the midst of our coolest conversations, and that gives kind of shows another dynamic to the band. I think
I'm really glad that that's the other one you picked.
Oh, well, you're welcome, Micah. Thanks again for talking with me today on our coolest conversations.
Thank you, I appreciate the invite.
You're certainly welcome.
Hosting our band on Sirius, and I'm excited to hear the rotation.
Well, you are certainly welcome, and you gotta, you know, when you're cruising, do you have Sirius in your van?
Yeah, we do.
Oh, really? Oh, that's cool. Well, I like the idea of being the little man in your radio, traveling with you.
Yeah. It's funny, actually. I don't mean to drag this on, but I was going to tell you as well. So I'm friends with Wildlife and all those guys, but I was delivering wine way up in the middle of the mountains in this tiny little liquor store I walked in, and I heard Wildlife playing, and they were listening to Sirius Underground Garage. So I had to text Dave and tell him that he was playing in a tiny little mountain back in the middle of the Rocky Mountains.
That's really cool. That is really cool. Well, we're going to take a listen now to Help Me. It's Fast Eddie off their album Take a Look in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Heard some of the Fast Eddie track Help Me off their album Take a Look here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to the band's Micah Morris for speaking with me today. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing our podcast. Next time around will be an extra special Coolest Conversations. I'll be speaking with both Taj Mahal and Rye Cooter. The pair haven't worked together since the 1960s, but have rejoined forces for their upcoming album Get On Board, the songs of Sonny Terry and Brownie McGhee. It's Taj Mahal and Rye Cooter on your next Coolest Conversations podcast.
presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Give me a mic check for Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa, Florida.
Oh, hello, check one Tampa, check two Tampa. I need some more on one.
Okay.
Casino, check, check. Hard Rock. Tampa, check, check. Seminole Hard Rock.
Check it out for yourself at SeminoleHardRock.com. All right, guys, I'm rolling. Let's kick it.